The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Is your life lacking fun and adventure?
If you're looking for a break from the constant deluge of corporate media, come over to the Reality Escape Pod, a show of lovingly produced, edited episodes where we interview the creators of brilliant immersive games. Yes, in-person activities where you have actual real-life fun and adventure.
With the Reality Escape Pod, you can learn how the sausage of this new medium is made or how the puzzles are pondered. We cover set design, script writing, video production, and everything else that makes an immersive experience fun. Check out Reality Escape Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
And wait, there's more. If you're looking to dive into the deep end, the folks behind Reality Escape Pod also have a convention, Recon, the Reality Escape Convention, which is in person August 18th and 19th in sunny Burbank, California. If you create immersive games or want to learn the ins and outs of the craft, come join the amazing community of creators and devotees to the immersive arts. You can learn more at realityescapecon.com. Whether you're looking for audio content in Reality Escape Pod, written content at Room Escape Artist, or an in-person experience at the Reality Escape Convention, we are eager to introduce you to the immersive world.
Before the show starts, make sure you visit the Breakfast Store for all the sweet breakfast merch, like the super comfy breakfast t-shirts and the very dapper breakfast coffee mugs. Go there now, breakfaststore.com.
People of Earth, if you can hear my voice, you have arrived at another episode of Breakfast with Brent Pope. I'm your host, Brent Pope, and this is not just any breakfast. This is breakfast number 100. So I had to bring the thunder in finding my guest today, and boy, did I ever do that, because my guest today is the multi-talented PG Law. You know her from projects like Survivor, not just once, but twice. She's also one of the hosts of the Reality Escape Pod, which covers one of my favorite hobbies, escape rooms. So we will talk all about that, and that's not all. We had breakfast at Bamboo Bistro, and it was a Filipino breakfast buffet. Blah. And that's...
a breakfast buffet.
Breakfast buffet. And that's not all. We had breakfast at Bamboo Bistro, and it was a Filipino breakfast buffet, not buffet. So let's go. We have PG Law today for episode number 100 of Breakfast.
Woo! Brr, 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 brr. Get some air horns.
Yay.
I feel like I'm really aging myself with the air horns here.
Pick it up.
Welcome to Breakfast with Brent Pope.
Breakfast.
This young lady just smashed the lids on all these cakes in the bakery section.
That could go on a Hallmark card.
My guest today.
Oh, I'm going to need to hear all about that.
I didn't need any extra sausage.
He adds character to my crew.
Is a goat pit a real thing?
Breakfast.
What?
Welcome to Breakfast with Brent Pope.
Great place to hang out and good food, too. I'm always playing blue-collar guys.
Breakfast. Somebody screwed through the pipe.
I wouldn't jump up and down until we stabilized the hydraulics.
I love a crawler. All my uncles got the gout. Jalapeno / cheddar waffles.
Who doesn't love that? It's breakfast time.
Breakfast.
The only show where bacon, pancakes, Hollywood. I'm your host, Brent Pope.
PG Law, welcome to the Tiny Studio LA in NoHo.
It is such an honor to be here for your 100th episode.
I don't know why, but I feel old just saying 100 episodes, like as if that makes me old. It doesn't.
That
means we did a lot of episodes of the show. It's weird.
How? Now, are you release 2 episodes a month? Is that how it?
So at one point we were doing like 1 episode every week. Now it's more like 1 every 2 weeks just because I've become busier and doing other separate things.
You admitted you valued your sanity and you didn't want to commit to an episode a week, which is onerous, people, especially if you're booking guests.
Yes, it's a lot, but I enjoy it. And if I didn't enjoy it, I wouldn't do it anymore. By the way, guys, this will be the final episode.
At breakfast, Brent was like, "Now I don't want to make you nervous or anxious or anything, but this is the final." No, he said this is the 100th episode, so it's really special.
So if you can
if I get a little emotional. This has been a part of my life, you know? I feel like I've been a survivor of this podcast.
We're voting him off the island. Cue the tribal music.
This ain't my first rodeo being voted off.
Nor mine either.
Yeah, there you go. Well, PG, so let's start like way back, not that far back. You were born in Hong Kong, right?
I was born in Hong Kong,
yes.
And I came over here like around a year or so.
Okay, that's about like the same as me. I was born in the Philippines. I don't remember the Philippines at all from being a baby. You don't remember Hong Kong. Have you been back to visit?
When we were younger, my parents used to take me back a lot more often. And then as we got older, you know, it kind of petered out a little bit. But I am definitely like a first generation Asian American. And let me tell you, you know, growing up in the 90s as an Asian American is a completely different story to kids growing up now, which I think really speaks to how important representation in the media is.
Sure.
I think about, because, you know, I'm thinking about all this because I just babysat my niece and nephew for this whole past week. We had Camp Ema while they were out of school. They are 5 years old. My niece is like 10, 11 years old.
Okay.
And so when I was that age, I kind of hated being Asian.
Yeah.
You know, and in fact, I thought I was white because all I saw around me, I grew up in like West LA, super, super white suburb. Everyone around me was, there weren't that many people of color around me at school on TV. And so, you know, it was the times when you'd bring soy milk to school and everyone's like, what's that? That's weird. And I had hot packed lunches because my mom made me like beef ribs and fish soup and you know, and all I wanted was PB&J.
Which are things that are awesome. But as a kid, you're like, oh, I don't want to be different.
You don't want to stand out, you know, and it's so interesting to me because the other day my sister turned to me, my niece's mom, and she was like, Avery was kind of upset the other day. And I was like, really? Why? And she goes, she doesn't think she looks Chinese enough.
Oh, wow.
Is it my fat? Because we have like really, really big round eyes. Everyone says round eye. No. But, you know, I just could not believe that it was such a different experience growing up that my niece now is really into being Asian. And they live in the same neighborhood that I grew up in Westchester. But because she's had all these role models and she goes to actually like a Chinese immersive school where it's like Chinese language. And, you know, even food, I was like, do you want hamburgers? And I was like, all I wanted to do was eat Westernized food. And now she's like, no, I kind of prefer Asian food. I want ramen. And like, it's blowing my mind. It's all coming around full circle. And I really think we have kind of this media to thank. Like it's, you know, she sees Mulan movies and all these representations. And it's awesome.
I think you're right. I would say I grew up more in the 80s and 90s. But the first time I've talked about this a little bit. First time I think I ever, it was a mind blowing moment for me when I saw that show Fresh Off the Boat. Right.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I identify with this family. And I was like, wait a minute. White people, this happens to them all the time. Yeah. I was like, this has never happened. I was like, oh, this is kind of like my family. Wait, this is kind of like my family. The domineering mom. Love you, mom. But
it helps you. But, you know, seeing that on TV helps you process your own childhood. Right. Mm-hmm. Like we can see how other kids dealt with it.
Yeah.
With parents that were like that, you know, that were super strict or like whatever. And having this experience that is American, but not really.
Yeah.
You know, I think it makes a huge difference. In fact, looking back now, there haven't been that many Asian people on Survivor.
Yeah,
right. When I went on. And so.
And they're constantly in Asia. They're in Asia all the time.
So this is how I didn't think of myself as a like self-hating Asian. Like, what does that even mean? You know, because it's not like. But looking back now, I think maybe subconsciously there is definitely a bit of that because. So my first season of Survivor was in China.
Right.
Right. And so I was like the, you know, quote unquote, token Chinese person.
Right.
Out there. And I think I went in with almost a chip on my shoulder because I didn't want to be representing Asian people. First of all, it's a burden. It's like a heavy burden to bear. And I didn't want it to be my identity.
Yeah.
I wanted to be acknowledged and valued for PG, for being myself and my own person outside of that identity. And they were always asking me questions about like, as an Asian person, how do you feel being out here in China? And I was like, we're in the freaking jungle. Like, I don't know what part of living in the mud in the jungle is supposed to like bring me back to my roots. Like, what are you trying to say?
PG, do you think you have an advantage over these other players? Because we are in Asia.
They asked me that at audition and casting. They were like, what you know, what advantage do you think being Asian would give you? And I was like, oh, like, I don't know. I don't even speak Mandarin. Jean Robert, the poker player who was on my season,
yeah,
spoke more Mandarin than I did.
Really?
Yeah, because he grew up in Taiwan. His parents were missionaries.
Wow. Jean Robert Balland. Yes, that's impressive that I know his name, guys. His whole name. I'm sometimes a degenerate gambler, okay? Anyway, so we're talking about Survivor. Yeah, I mean, that's what you're known for a lot, right? I mean, why not? It's like a huge show for years and years and years now. So tell me, how extensive was the audition process for that?
Okay, so like, I'll tell you, my road to getting on Survivor went like this. I had just gotten out of a bad breakup, okay? I was depressed for like 6 months. And I'm not the depressed type, but back then I was 29 years old. I was so sad and depressed. And one day I was like, PG, you can't go on like this. So I just kind of was like, I'm going to go on adventure. I'm going to take a trip somewhere by myself and regain my identity. And I felt happy for the first time in my life. I was like, yes, I'm on the right road. And so as I'm planning this, that same weekend, I get a call on the phone. And it was like a friend of my ex-boss's. And he was like, this is really, really random, but I'm in casting for Survivor. Will you come in and audition? And I was like, what? I'd never even seen the show before.
Yeah.
I had no idea what it entailed, but I was like, you know what, PG? You asked the universe for an adventure, and it literally fell in your lap. So you have no choice. And honestly, I think because of that mindset, I don't know why, but I knew I was going to get on. It's just one of those weird things. Like I quit working. I entered really late in the casting process. There was basically from the time he called me until the day they were planning on leaving, it was about a month's time. Okay. But I didn't find out I got on for sure until a week before we left.
Wow.
So I really didn't have any time to lose. I started preparing for being on Survivor the minute I started auditioning, not even knowing I was going to get on. Because you don't have any time to waste. And I was like, what's the worst that happens if I don't get on? I'll be in better shape and I'll have learned how to, you know, tie some knots and make some fire.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how that went. But it's a pretty extensive process. We fill out a giant application. It's like a phone book. It's super, super thick. And I'll tell you this. One of the reasons I got cast on is because I flunked out of UCLA. This is a true story. And so getting expelled from UCLA was probably one of the worst moments of my entire life. And like super, super, I was so ashamed of it. I was basically like a crazy party girl raver in college. And I just took incompletes on all of my classes. I was up partying like every weekend. And, you know, eventually it was like a wake up call. I got expelled. They said, if you go to community college for 2 semesters, you get a, you know, B+ average, we'll let you back in. And I did. Eventually I got back and I graduated. But anyhow, there's this section on the application that was like, you know, and it was in the same section that was like, have you ever been arrested? Mm. Have you ever been sued? All these bad things. And in the same section is like, have you ever been, you know, expelled from college, from whatever? And I was like, I wrote it in very tiny writing, like, yes, I was expelled from UCLA. I'm so ashamed, right? I'm the worst Asian in the world.
Right.
And somebody called me from casting. And they were like, I wanted to ask you about this section where it says you got expelled. Can you talk about that a little bit more? And so I explained how it happened and why. And she goes, that's the most interesting thing about you that I've read in this entire application. She's like, I'm going to put you through to finals. When you talk to Jeff Probst or Lynn Spillman, who was the casting director at the time, she goes, make sure you tell them this story. She was like, if they do not ask you about it, make sure you work it in somehow. She was like, just trust me. I have been doing this for a very long time. This will get you on the show. And I was like, what? This was blowing my mind. And yeah, is that wild?
I've been applying for Survivor just recently. I'm really close to being on the show, PG. I'm just going to add to my thing, like, guys, I didn't mention that. I did kill a man once.
You know what? That would probably get you on the show. Especially, you know, I think it was about playing opposite type. So they'd had like the overachieving Asians.
Yeah.
They just had a bunch of overachieving Asians on. So here I am, the most underachieving Asian ever. And they were like, this is great. We're going to put her on.
Well, and they're also like, so many people on that show are just like these overachieving whatever they do. They also need somebody that's like a little bit of a bad girl or a little bit of somebody that's like maybe subversive, like is going to work against, you know, I mean, in their storylines they're creating that may or may not be 100% real, right? Or maybe they're like kind of just fostering them on the show. But yeah, I'm sure that fit like almost like a little Johnny Fairplay, if you know Johnny Fairplay.
The original TV villain, reality star villain.
Yeah. I recently saw him on a show called, it's called like Villain House.
House of Villains.
House of Villains.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It's Big Brother, but all the bad guys of reality TV.
He kind of made me sad, like watching him on that show, because I was like, Johnny, come on, man. Let's get the bravado back.
I'll tell you something, though, because there's a lot of Survivor reunions and get together and like charity events where all the past castaways come together and hang out. Johnny Fairplay is one of the most charming, charismatic men I have met in my life. I don't know if it's because he's a womanizer, but even if he is, it doesn't come off as creepy. He comes off as a man who appreciates women.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even necessarily feel that creepy, at least to me. Other people will probably tell you differently, but I can see why he got cast. There's a charm to him, even though he's like a sleazeball, but there's something kind of charming.
Yeah, I think if he had chosen to play the game just being like everyone's friend instead of like, I'm going to just try to subvert everybody and do things like that, I think he could have gotten really far in the game, you know? The way he was playing it, you could never win doing that, because by the time they vote for you, no one's voting for you at the end, because you basically lied to everybody and made everyone mad at you, and you lied about your grandma being dead. I mean, come on.
I mean, ultimately, when you are out there for 36 plus days, the whole thing goes to 39 days, but you can't fake it for that long. You cannot fake it 24/7. And so all these people who are in their casting videos have like a, if they got like a, an act or like a shtick, like don't do shtick in your casting video.
Right.
They don't, you know what I mean? Don't talk about how good you are at surviving unless you're really like a bushmaster and you've spent 20 years taking people through the wilderness. Don't focus on that. What they care about is your personality, really.
Yeah, that's cool. So you're on Survivor one time, you get fifth place. And it was, if you've seen Survivor, it's one of those things where like you're on the tribe that has less numbers. So basically your tribe just gets whittled down and you're the last one. You're the last one of that other tribe, though.
So I feel like when you say fifth place, it doesn't sound that great.
It's great. What are you talking about? Fifth place is amazing.
Fifth place doesn't even podium at the Olympics, okay?
But how many people started? Like 20?
Well, in my season, it was six. In my first season, it was 16 people.
Okay.
But I will say this. It meant that I was in every episode except for the last one.
Yeah.
So out of 39 days total, I was on for 36 of them.
Yeah.
So that is pretty good.
To me, it's impressive. I don't know if you thought I was saying it wasn't impressive. Tell you what, Survivor's a really cool show. I would not want to do that show. It just seems, I mean, that's the mosquito bites alone. I'm out.
Living in the mud and dirt and having no food and having to, fight amongst a bunch of other alpha males, that doesn't sound appealing to you?
No, I'll be on like the circle where I can like eat whatever I want, not even have to wear clothes if I don't want to. No one can see me. Anyway, well, that's really cool. I've never really hung out with anybody who's been on Survivor. And I'll tell you what. So you talk about how fifth place is impressive. Here's the other thing that's impressive. You don't get to come back on a second time unless you really stuck in people's minds for some reason. You got to come back for a second time in, was it Cambodia?
Cambodia Second Chances. So it was an all-star season where it was all returning players. And what was cool about this time was that it was, I think, the first time that Survivor or even maybe any reality show had let America vote for who's going to be on the show, period.
Oh, wow. So you were voted in by America.
We were voted in by America. They started off with like, I think it was 32 people, maybe 22 women and 22 men. The math is off here. That's 40. I don't know. It was some, look.
It's a lot of people.
There's a lot of people. So and this was kind of even worse because on top of prepping to get on the show, now we have to campaign as well.
Right.
And so I wasn't even on Twitter. I wasn't barely on Instagram. And so suddenly I had to start a Twitter account. So I didn't already have a following. So if there's an argument to be made for already having a robust following, I guess that's it. And the other thing that I really regretted was I wasn't that involved in the greater Survivor community before that. Whereas a lot of these people had been going to these events over the past years and they were already friends. And so you've already got a leg up when it comes to like forming alliances. And of course, again, because it's open, you know who's going to be on the show. There's a lot of pre-gaming going on. You're not supposed to do it, but of course everybody's going to do it. Everyone's calling each other like, hey, like, let's hang out. Remember, we had dinner that one time. Aren't we friends? Like, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. It was overwhelming. It was so much. It was like we were already playing the game. I mean, we haven't even started and everyone's already politicking.
Wow. Well, that had to feel good, having yourself being voted in, which means that the fans loved you.
They like me. They really liked you. I mean, that is one of the cool parts, is knowing that you were voted in by the fans. I was very lucky because on my first season of Survivor, I was an underdog.
Yeah.
I guess, I don't know if it's lucky. Like, nobody starts off wanting to be the underdog.
Right.
Being an underdog sucks.
Yeah.
Because it means the odds are totally against you. Everyone's against you. You're totally beaten down.
Yep.
Nothing is going your way. And you have to fight tooth and nail for every inch that you gain yourself. And of course, that's what makes you a compelling character, but
right.
It sucks.
Yeah, I kind of went back and was watching your season and the China season. It was like, you were on the brink every episode where it was like, you had to fight. I mean, there was no ones where you're just sitting back like, well, I'm good this week, you know, like.
I would have no idea what that's like. I've always kind of lone wolfed it. You know, I think part of the reason why it was compelling was because, you know, remember that story I told you about how I was, before I went on this, I was all depressed.
Yeah.
And just, I was in like a really bad place in life. And so this was like a lifeline. I was like, I need this. I needed to prove something to myself.
Right.
That I was capable of more, which I knew I was. And it really brought it out in me. And I'm one of those people that, like, when I'm in a stressful situation, that's really when I perform best. And so there is a desperation in, like, me really wanting to win this and do this. And I think you can see that through the lens, through the camera, you know.
Yeah.
That's part of what makes it compelling. I think that's part of why I wasn't as compelling the second time I went on, because I was, like, living fat and happy. I was complacent in life. And you don't have that edge, that drive that really makes you want to try. Like in Survivor, it sucks when you watch someone just dial it in or like kind of give up or like not, you know, you're like, you know, like if you try just a little bit harder, you could do something. And instead people just sit back and accept your fate. And you're like, why aren't you talking to people? Why aren't you out there hustling? And we want to watch the hustle. You know, that's
right.
Part of what makes for great TV.
Sure. Yeah. Well, congrats on being on there twice. I mean, there's not that many people have done it. How do you feel being a person that's been on it? Like, you know, if people are huge fans of the show, they may just recognize you. How do you feel about that? Has that been a good thing for you? Is that something that doesn't affect you at all?
I mean, okay, so look, it's been 15 years since
sure.
the first season aired. And I don't get recognized that often. And I'll tell you something, even when I do, because the show I was on Survivor, most often I get recognized at like the airport at 6 a.m. when I'm haggard and I have bags under my eyes and no makeup. And they're like, oh, that's PG from Survivor. They wouldn't recognize me otherwise if I'm all glammed up.
PG, Tom from TMZ.
No, but more often, because you're on a reality show, more often than not, people just think, did we go to high school together?
Yeah.
Did we used to work together? Like, where do I know you from? And then I have to kind of be like, do you watch Survivor? Like,
I know.
And then, of course, the one time I did it, she was like, no, do you have a sister named Jade? And I was like, I do have a sister named Jade.
That's the worst. We probably can relate there because, like, since most of the TV shows I do like one or two episodes. People are always like, I think I know you. And I'm like, and I have to be like, do you watch this show? No. And they're like, oh, okay, never mind. I guess you don't know me then. Well, cool. Before we go any further, we did have breakfast at Bamboo Bistro, which is, it's a Filipino restaurant that has a buffet. So we went there for the breakfast buffet, and it's a big buffet. We couldn't have eaten all these foods if we tried. It's just like too many foods. What were some of the highlights for you?
Oh my God. So I don't know the names of anything.
I'll try to name them, but I make no promises.
First of all, I'm so thrilled you took me to buffet because I have massive FOMO. And this way I got to try a little bit of everything.
Right. Yeah.
My favorite was the arroz caldo,
yeah.
Which is like congee.
Mm-hmm.
It's a rice porridge, rice soup.
Yeah. And this one is like, I think made with like maybe chicken and like chicken broth and rice. And yeah,
I love a savory breakfast, and there's nothing more comforting to me than like a bowl of rice soup. It's like a hug. And so my favorite thing with that was actually these little crispy fried fish.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Break those up, throw them in the congee or the arroz caldo.
Yeah.
And then they also had kind of like a ground beef.
Mm-hmm.
What was that called?
I don't know what that's called. My mom makes it. It's just ground beef that has like chunks of potato and tomato in it. And I don't know what it's actually called. It's delicious.
Eat that with the garlic rice. Oh, my God. If you guys have never had Filipino garlic fried rice, it is the best thing ever.
Yeah.
It makes everything taste delicious.
And they have three different, they had a garlic fried rice that had, like, I think shrimp paste in it.
Yeah.
There was one that was kind of plain. There was some leche flan, which is like a, you know, it's like a flan. It's like a custard.
Not too sweet. The
not
perfect
too sweet.
Dessert. The best compliment you could give, an Asian person could give a dessert is it's not too sweet.
Also had the, there were some nice chunks of like fried chicken. And I just say chunks because they weren't cut into like the normal, you know, this is the leg, this is the thigh. It was like parts of everything, you know.
Can I tell you that I'm a better eater of Filipino food than Brent is? Because
I mean, you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
Because all of these things, I was like, I tried everything. And Brent's like, I've never tried that. And I was like, here, try it. He was like,
Well, we had like the dinuguan, which is like, it's kind of like, it has like, it's like beef and offal.
Is that the soup thing?
It was like the one that was real dark. Like it had the meat.
It was like a blood, like almost like a pork blood stew.
Right, basically. So, and it tasted pretty good. I just, you know, when I was a kid, when I was presented to me, I was like, I'm not eating that. And then like, and then I don't see it again really unless I go to a place like this. So I'm still like, I don't know if I like that. I did eat it. It was pretty good. Yeah.
I made you try the salted preserved egg, the century egg.
That was great. But you got to put it in something, right?
It's really salty. It's almost like a condiment. So you got to eat it with rice or eat it with the rice soup. And then I also tried that soup that was almost like a menudo. Like it had tripe and other organs like liver. That was funky. It was good. Yeah. It was a good funk, but it was like the flavor was like, you know, if you've ever stood in a barn and just opened your mouth and taken a big whiff of the barn.
I mean, I have. Yeah. I grew up on a farm. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, dairy farm in Nebraska.
Well, it tasted just like that, but in a good way.
Then I'm good on it. I think.
Listen, I like a little. You got to get a little bit of funk. I like a little bit of funk with my music. I like a little bit of funk.
There's just some Filipino foods that, like, I personally don't. I'm going to just say it this way. I don't personally stomachically identify with them. like balut. Have you ever had balut?
We had to eat balut as part of the gross food challenge in my first season of Survivor.
Oh, Survivor? I bet it's better if it's like hot and made for you instead of just like cold on an island in the mud, probably. But was it, was it just really bad or was,
this
I mean,
was at it, the time, this was the best thing I'd ever eaten because
really?
I was so hungry at that point. We did not eat for like the first 4 days. I was out there for 4 days. I had nothing.
No.
And so when it was like gross food, I was like, they're giving us food. This is manna from the heavens.
Yeah.
And I didn't even eat it fast enough. So someone else beat me, right? Because I'm not very good at eating fast.
Yeah.
But I kept eating it after we were done because it's protein, right?
Yeah. Well, it's a fertilized egg. So it's an egg that's like grown up into like part of a chicken, basically.
It's a chicken embryo. So it looks very much like a little baby chick, but with the egg yolk still attached.
Yeah.
And sometimes some of the organs are still like on the outside or they're not fully
formed. Yeah, and there's like, somebody's like, my friend told me, like, you got to try it. There's a crunchy little beak. And I was like, that's not going to make me eat it. The feathers, they get stuck in your teeth. No.
There was one of the ladies on Survivor. She was actually trying to throw the challenge. So she was trying to lose on purpose.
Wow.
The problem is, she doesn't even eat eggs in her normal life because it grosses her out. So imagine being confronted with balut.
I mean, if I was starving, I guess I would eat it. But like, it's just not something I'm going to choose to eat. I'm sorry. If that makes me a bad Filipino, makes me a bad Filipino.
but you can sing good.
I can sing, yes. I'll make up for it with my rendition of Separate Ways by Journey. So that's the other thing about Bamboo Bistro. They have like karaoke, like basically, or comedy, like every night of the week there. So that's great. It's in like Panorama City in a little shopping area. I think it's called Plaza del Sol, I believe it's called.
This is the most Filipino restaurant ever.
Pretty much is. Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you for going there with me. I ate way too much food. It was delicious. And I'm glad you enjoyed it. You got to try it. We also had the very thin, crispy fish also. Remember that you kind of crumbled up like crackers?
Yes. That was delicious. I love that.
And we also had the tocino, which is like the thick, kind of sweet Filipino bacon. Now, the only thing I was missing there was like some nice fried spam. That would have been delicious.
Oh, yeah. You got to have the spam. And we missed the pancit.
We did miss the pancit. Probably it was showing up for the
brunch,
the brunch, which we were not allowed to eat, Big Science said. Anyway, Bamboo Bistro, go check it out, guys. You'll get full and you're going to try a bunch of different Filipino foods there. You know, another thing that you and I, first time we met, I guess, was, well, I think we met before, maybe at like an escape room meetup somewhere. But we recently went on a tour to Albuquerque of escape rooms. And you're part of the Reality Escape Pod, which is like the, I don't know if it's the only escape room podcast, but it's the only one I know of. It's definitely the biggest one, probably in the United States, at least.
Well, you know, I like to think so. I wouldn't say it's the only one, but we do cover kind of more industry stuff. So we interview a lot of designers, people who create games, immersive games, escape rooms, but we don't only cover escape rooms.
Right.
We cover anything in the immersive gaming world, anything that we think will inspire escape room creators, because ultimately that's our love and passion. But escape rooms draw from a lot of different mediums. So they draw from theater, they draw from LARPs, they draw from even strategy board games, you know, puzzle hunts, things like that. And I think that some of my favorite experiences take from things that are outside the normal world of escape rooms, like where there's a lot of theatricality, you're interacting with a performer.
I agree.
Yeah.
Like something like the now defunct Miss Jezebel's room, right? Very like, yeah. To me, I call every room like that now a Miss Jezebel type room because it's one where the conceit is there's someone in the room. When they leave, you have to do all the stuff when they're out of the room. And then when they come back, you have to come back.
So, yes. Yeah, so, and the thing is, this room was also like not even R rated. It was basically like NC-17, X rated even, I would say. A lot of raunchy, raunchy humor. So my friend Brian Corbett designed that room, and he designed that room as an April Fool's Day joke for his friends and his employees. And it was just a joke.
Yeah.
That's how it started off. And everyone that played it loved it. And they were like, you gotta just put this in your normal, you know, business. You gotta like let people play this. And he was part of the 60 Yacht franchise at the time. And they were like, this is not really quite family friendly entertainment.
Wow.
But it is one of the best games to have come out of the entire franchise.
Well, and it's one of the rooms that doesn't exist anymore, but people still talk about that room and people love that room.
Large part of what made that room so legendary, though, was the actor.
Sure.
The actor that they had for was so witty, so funny, and they were really good at getting the groups to engage. So you're in there, you're chatting with the actor, and they're like, don't touch anything. I'll be right back. And then they leave. That's when you're doing normal escape room stuff. You're scrambling around. You're looking, you know, under the pillows and through the drawers and solving puzzles. And then they come back and you have to like race back to your seats and sit there like nothing happened. And then you get another interaction. It was so much fun.
Now, we've been talking about escape rooms for a little bit. Why don't we, in case we have people in here that don't even know what that is, what's the elevator pitch? What's an escape room?
It's basically a game where you are timed, you are put into a room, you are given a goal. There's usually narrative, some type of story, and the goal might just be escaping the prison or defusing the bomb. Sometimes it's more nebulous, like discovering, you know, what Miss Jezebel, is she a killer? Finding evidence that she's a killer and things like that. And so you solve puzzles and you might do some kind of tasks, and that's usually it.
To me, like, the feeling of it is when I'm in the good escape room, it's like myself and whoever's with me are in our own, like, action/mystery movie for 1 hour.
You get to be the hero. You're the star, like, you're driving the action.
And it's like you can see the time counting down, or you can feel the time counting down, so you have pressure to, like, do all these things. Because in the movie, they're always going to do it in the hour, right? They're always going to do it in the hour and a half. You might not, so.
There is, like, dopamine that is released in your brain when you discover something, when you get the right answer, when you figured it out. And for me, one of the best parts of an escape room is that there is feedback when you've made a discovery. So imagine when you learn something and it's like really exciting. Say you're playing a video game and you figured out how it works, or you've done the goal. But in this case, in an escape room, there'll be lights that go off. There might be a sound. There might be a drawer that pops open, and it kind of triggers that same dopamine as when you've hit, win a jackpot or something.
Oh, sure.
You know, yeah. And it's because of something you did. And it makes you feel smart. A good escape room will make you feel super clever and super observant and really adventurous. And like a hidden door will pop open and it's a whole new world.
Yeah. It's also the same feeling I get when I'm playing like Xbox, right? And I get an achievement. Blink. That achievement pops up. I'm like, yes, I did that.
And the other thing that I love is there is also a serotonin that comes with teamwork. When you're in there with your group of friends and family, and some of the best puzzles will involve the whole team. I've always said that there's this one puzzle we did where it was brutal. It was a lot of like translating and transcribing and the code would change and you had like a 1 minute window to get everything done.
Yeah.
And we were failing over and over and over. We were getting so frustrated until suddenly we all focused. And everybody that was standing around doing nothing, they were like, I'll take the first two letters. You take the second two letters. I'll call them. I'm going to flip the switches. And you all have your jobs and your roles. And then eventually you're like, you become one mind.
Yeah.
You know, you're working in unison. And there's this feeling, I don't know what it is, that this bonding feeling, the chemicals released in your brain where you're kind of like one with your friends and you're all working together. And it is the best feeling in the world. Mm-hmm. I think that's why I keep coming back to escape rooms over and over and over again.
Yeah. You know, that last tour we went on, and they're like curated tours that are put on by
Room Escape Artists,
who is also closely related to the podcast.
So the podcast is a production of Room Escape Artists, which is a website that reviews escape rooms, but they also run conventions for escape room industry people. We have escape room tours where we take people like yourselves to a city and we arrange the entire schedule for it. So like you don't have to do anything. All you have to do is buy the ticket. We book all the escape rooms. And what's great is that, you know, a lot of times escape rooms, you want to play with like maybe four to six people, is an ideal number. But if you're a solo traveler or even a couple, sometimes it's not enough to do a whole room. This way you have other people to play with that aren't just like the general public.
Yes.
And you meet a lot of really cool people that's into the same things that you are. And it's a lot of fun. The people that go on these tours are great.
And I can tell that you're going to say this, PG, so I'll just mention myself. Yes, I was part of the team that set four records in Albuquerque.
I was just not about to mention that. That was the only reason I came on the podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
I was so impressed by this, Brent.
You know what's weird? Like, we did happen to set some records in Albuquerque. That's never been a part of our escape room story because Tressa, my wife, and I usually do them by ourselves. And we're used to being like, 2 minutes left or 5 minutes left, you know what I mean? And we like usually kind of try to enjoy the room. We just happened to be with teams that were just like, it was almost like the Fantastic Four, right? Where all of us had a slightly different skill set. None of them overlapped and it works greatly.
You were working so well together.
Yeah, as a team. I gotta say, I played one room with you. That room was so much fun. It was such a giant room, though, that I didn't even see you until maybe an hour into the room.
I had a lot of fun in that room because I got to unleash the beast. Normally in like an escape room, I'm trying not to take over because a large part of being a good teammate is making sure everybody gets to feel involved in everything, right? And so I try to be really like courteous most times.
Right.
But this was such a big room with so many puzzles. I was like, I'm just going to solve this. I'm just going to solve this by myself. Everyone else is busy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, and you just got to do a bunch of stuff.
Same thing. I mean, I was on the wall that I would just call the hieroglyphics wall. I mean, the whole thing was just like a giant. And so I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do this. And I don't regret it. I had fun.
What is it about escape rooms that draws you in so much?
You know, it's interesting because I always say I don't like kind of horror type rooms. And then I recently was looking, I was like, God, a lot of my favorite rooms are horror rooms. So I don't know if it's more the suspension of disbelief, like when I'm watching a movie, except I'm in the movie.
Horror rooms elicit a very strong feeling and emotion in you that a normal one might not. And so I think we go in these rooms to have experiences that make us feel something.
Yeah, so it's either that where I'm feeling like anxious the entire time or the opposite, like a room like Super Secret in Albuquerque where I was just smiling from ear to ear and just felt delightful the entire game, right?
That room had really high production value and a lot of humor. It was really funny.
Funny rooms to me will go along with smart, funny rooms and also, you know, scary rooms will both get it for me. But I think it's just like, I actually prefer it when there's less than 1 minute left and I feel like maybe we won't get out. I love that feeling.
Well, you got to take it to the very edge, right? It's about people that are like, they're testing the boundaries. You want to know how far you can take it. And that feeling, that very real feeling of, are we going to fail or not? The adrenaline starts pumping and then you're getting excited. That's what makes things fun. I'll say this to anybody who's never tried one before or tried one or two who just, you were like, it sucked. It wasn't that fun. If you're looking for a good escape room in your area that's already been vetted by the pros, go to roomescapeartist.com. They've got reviews. They have recommendation guides for almost every city. So try one of the escape rooms that are recommended on there and go in with a certain mindset of discovery, of sharing. And like, the goal is to actually work together with your team. It's not to like hog all the puzzles or rip through them as fast as possible. It's to explore it together. I guarantee you will have a much better time.
Yeah, I've got friends who are like, we really want to do, we've never done an escape room. We've never done one. We want to do one with you and Tressa. I just want to be this like maverick wild card. And I was like, I'm not doing a room with you then. I mean, that's like, we're a team. We're trying to help each other. We're not like, you know, it's not like Mission Impossible where Tom Cruise and all of his partners are all trying to solve it themselves and, you know, getting in each other's way. That's no fun to me. Now, we've all been that person in the moment sometimes where we're like a little pushy or whatever, because things get away from you, maybe. But in general, it's like a great team. That's why so many, I think, businesses also have things where they like, they have their company go do an escape room as like a team building exercise.
Team building,
Yeah. So, but yeah, I really love your podcast.
Thank you.
Everyone should check it out. Reality Escape Pod. It's everywhere you want to, you know.
Yep. We're everywhere where you, every podcast catcher, you can go to realityescapepod.com. It's on the website. So yeah, definitely check it out. We do interviews on that one. And then we have bonus after shows that's more casual. And then if you're really into escape rooms, we also have something called the Spoilers Club for patrons, where we do recap behind the scenes walkthroughs of particular escape rooms, which is really cool. Because then the hardest part about podcasting about escape rooms, it's like the Fight Club. You can't talk about the escape rooms because it's like a spoiler-free zone. So imagine if you had a podcast where you only talk about movies with twists, but you can't say what the twist is because you don't want to ruin it for the audience. Like, how do you even talk about these things?
It's tough. I'll say this, guys. I only am a patron of one podcast, and it's the Reality Escape Pod, because I want to get the Spoilers Club. Like the rooms that I've done, I was like, I want to hear how they did that in that room because I need to know.
Oh,
anyway.
My God. Thank you. Thank you so much. That really, I really appreciate
and
that.
And I feel like we have not mentioned your co-host, the great David Spira. And now we have. We mentioned.
David, in case you didn't know, apparently Brent has a really great impression of you.
No. Okay, Dave. I told you I was going on a, I did David's voice on a podcast. Maybe poorly. Who knows? Who knows?
Well, shout out to David. Thank you so much for putting me on the podcast, bringing me into this world with you. It has been some of the best moments of my life. I love being a part of the Room Escape Artist team, and I love being a co-host on the podcast.
Yeah, it's really fun. People of Earth, if you would like to get more Brentfast stuff, such as pics of PG Law and I enjoying our breakfast from Bamboo Bistro, go to my website, brentpope.com. You can listen to all the breakfast episodes there. You can see clips from all my TV appearances in the official breakfast store with a bunch of fun stuff. Shirts, mugs, stickers, PG Law. I got fifth on Survivor, and that's awesome. Scarves and ascots. Three left, guys. $15 each. It's in there. People of Earth, do yourself a favor by picking up something from the breakfast store, breakfaststore.com. And if you enjoy the show, please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to Breakfast, and make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any new episodes. Breakfast is being enjoyed all over the United States and in 58 countries across the globe. And trust me, my Breakfast Burrito Brigade, we are just getting started. Special thanks to my studio engineer, Marco Leon, a.k.a. the infamous Space Panda, and everyone at the fabulous Tiny Studio LA, thetinystudioLA.com, for making me sound so good. PG Law, what is next for you, and where can we find you on social media?
You can find me everywhere at PG, PEIHGEE. You can check out the podcast, Reality Escape Pod, on all podcast catchers. We will be hosting our convention, realityescapecon.com. That's going to be for escape room industry folks and aficionados. I will be emceeing the event, so make sure to come check that out. And if you're interested in watching my past episodes of Survivor, I was on Survivor China 15 and Survivor 31, Second Chances in Cambodia. And Brett, Thank you so much for having me on the podcast. And I want to tell all of your listeners, if you have enjoyed listening to this show, please leave a review. It means so much to us. We read all of them. We ooh and aah over them. If you want to really make his day, if this podcast made you smile, leave him a review.
Thank you very much. That would be very helpful, guys. Now watch. You never leave me reviews. Well, you do sometimes. You do leave me
it
good
means
you reviews.
Hated it. Yeah. You hated it. You should never.
PG Law, thank you so much for coming into the Tiny Studio LA. And with that, we put another immersive out in just under 60 minutes. Live actor in the room. Spooky, but not scary. Episode of Breakfast with Brent Pope in the old to-go bag. See ya.
Enjoy Breakfast with Brent Pope? Help support it by buying some awesome swag like the comfy shirts and the beautiful coffee mugs. Go to breakfaststore.com.